Good morning to everyone. I want to thank everybody for being here. And if you were hoping for Sid, sorry about that. You're stuck with me today. But Sid asked me to fill in while he's out of town. And I'm taking this opportunity to report on the recent trip that I made to India, evangelism trip. And want to thank the congregation here for your financial help with that, which is second or third time that you all have helped with one of my trips, and that is very much appreciated. Without your help and the help of other congregations, those trips simply would not be possible. And it is through that that you have yourselves joined that work, and I believe it is very much a worthwhile endeavor and something that is worth doing and that much good has come from. And I hope to talk to you some about that this morning. It's been a couple of years since I went. We typically do one trip a year, and I did not go on last year's trip. And so, had not initially planned to go on this year's trip either, but circumstances were that they really needed me to go and asked me to go, so I was able to do so, and it worked out well. This was my 12th trip to India, and I've been going for about 15 years, mostly every year, but missed a couple of trips here and there. So 12 trips in all so far. We'll see if I make it back or not, but it is certainly a good work. This photo that you see here is a photo I took while in Delhi, two or three weeks ago, and we were coming back from teaching classes at the facility that was being rented out, and there was this group of soldiers on camels going by. That's even for India, that's not a typical thing to see, but there they were, and we think that they were actually had been practicing for the upcoming Republic Day parade. Republic Day is kind of like Independence Day or 4th of July in India, and they have similar type celebrations. So so the camels were going by. This was essentially what like camels going by on New Circle Road kind of thing. I mean, this is a major road. This was not a small road. As was read earlier, we have certainly biblical example of giving reports on evangelism trips. Paul and Barnabas returned back to Antioch, and they gathered the church together, and they declared all that God had done with them and how he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. And so my hope in talking to you this morning is to do my own version of that, not quite on the level of Paul or Barnabas, but in my own humble way to do that and to share some photos and give you some information about the work in India so that you can understand better what we're doing and the background to that. And because this trip is part of what has been essentially a 25-year ongoing work there in India. So we're not necessarily breaking new ground with this trip, but rather we are building on a foundation that has been laid carefully for a number of years and a lot of taking advantage of a lot of open doors that have come to us. This will give you a little bit of an idea of India. India is on the opposite side of the world. So you take an 8 or 9 hour plane flight to Europe, and then you're about halfway. You have to do it again. You get to Europe, and then you fly another 8 or 9 hours I flew into Delhi this time. Sometimes we fly into Mumbai or Bombay, as it was formerly known. India is roughly equivalent latitudinally with Mexico, so you can sort of think about that type of weather. So January is a really good time to go to India, because in Hyderabad, where we spent most of the time, it was lows in the 60s, maybe upper 50s, and highs low to mid 80s. It's nice. So I've been to India in the summer. That's not a good time to go to India. It's much better to go in January. January tends to work out well for us. It's kind of the least disruptive in schedules, and that's true for the Indians as well. India is a very diverse country, far more diverse than, especially language-wise, than we are accustomed to. Essentially, every state that you go into, there is a different primary language that's spoken. So if you're in, it'd be like being in Kentucky and people speak Kentuckian, and you go to Tennessee and they speak Tennessean, and you go to Ohio and they speak Ohioan, and they might be related languages, but they're different languages. It's, you know, being like in Europe and going from Spain to France to Germany, just different languages, but they're all in the same country. So Hindi is the official national language, but most Indians don't speak Hindi. It's really you'll find Indians everywhere who will. Of course, the other hand, I don't speak Hindi, so that's a problem. Good news is, lots of people speak English. So, and I speak English, so we're able to communicate pretty well most everywhere we go. But it is a very large country. It has 1.3 billion people in it, and it is slated by projections to surpass China as the most populous country in the world. And that's within the next few years. Within the next decade that will happen. But it is not nearly as big, although India is big, it's not nearly as big as China, it's not nearly as big as the United States. So you have roughly three times the population in India as you do in the United States, and about a third of the land size. So it's roughly from the Mississippi River east, maybe a little bit taking a little bit more landmass than that, but that's roughly how big India is. That's big, but then you put over a billion people in it, and it gets a little crowded. So one of the things that you adjust to when you're there is that everywhere you go, it's really crowded. It's really crowded everywhere. So you can drive streets of Lexington, even residential streets, and maybe not see anybody in the middle of the day. That will never happen to you in India. There will always be people walking around and people everywhere and lots of traffic. So especially during busy times, traffic can be very difficult. And so it can take a long time to get places. So getting to India is not easy because it's far away. There are also, as I said, is a very diverse country, not only language-wise, because of so many different languages spoken in different areas, but it's also very diverse religiously. Now, the vast majority of Indians are Hindu. That is the native religion of India. Over 80% of Indians are Hindu, but there are a lot of other religions that are very active. So when you think, well, they're only 2.3% Christian, and that's encompassing all people who would identify as Christians, whatever denominational group that would be, 2.3%. But if you have 2.3% of a billion, that's still a lot of people. So you're dealing with a lot of folks. It is a challenge to convert Hindus. But there is still a large Christian population that can be taught, and not that Hindus aren't at times converted. And I'm going to talk to you about some of the challenges with that, at least as far as we're concerned. That's something that we typically avoid and have to have to be careful about because of our, just for us to be over there, because of the government oversight right now, especially. So because of the difference that you find religiously, you might come out of your hotel and find a large statue of the god Hanuman, the monkey god, on a cart outside of your hotel. That's just that was just on the street on the first Sunday morning when I was leaving to go speak that morning. That was across the street, and we came back. It was gone. Somebody carted it off. But this was not something that you would probably find around Lexington if you were to drive the streets. But that's not an uncommon sight in India, just reflecting, of course, the native religion. And, of course, there is a very large percentage of Muslims as well, especially in Hyderabad, which is the country that we spend a lot of our time in. And it's probably 15 to 20%. Hyderabad is 15 to 20% Muslim, and this picture was taken down in an area where it's probably a much higher percentage than that, sort of a Muslim area, because Hyderabad was ruled by a Muslim king for centuries, in fact. So this is the group that went this time. There you see on the far left, Brother Benson, who is our primary contact, primary Indian contact in India and in Hyderabad. He has worked with Brother Harold for 25 years in the work there in India and in Hyderabad. Benson actually is in the United States right now. He came over. His son is studying a graduate program in Huntsville, Alabama, at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, working on his doctorate right now in engineering. So he came over to visit him and also went down to the Florida College lectures. But Benson has made several trips to the United States. He stayed in our home when we lived in Kansas City and visited churches there. Beside him is John Weaver, who is from Texas. This was his third trip. There you see on the far right is Brother Lance Bowman. Some of you may know D. Bowman or know of D. Bowman. He's D's nephew. And this was his third or fourth trip. Then there's me beside him. And then there in the center is Brother Ed Harrell. And Brother Harrell is the one who really initiated this work about 25 years ago. He had an academic appointment there. He is now a retired professor of history from Auburn University, written a number of books. But he had an academic appointment to an American Studies Center there in Hyderabad in the mid-90s. And he took that position specifically because he would be able to work with Christians in Hyderabad over an extended period of time, because missionaries are not supposed to come in to India, outside missionaries. And so you can't go to the government of India and say, I'm a missionary and I want to come stay in your country for 2 years or an indefinite period of time. They will say, no, you will not come into our country and stay that long. You have to have some reason to be there for an extended period of time like that. And so he had an actual academic appointment, and so he was able to stay and able to lay the foundations for this work that has been continuing on for these 25 years. Brother Harold is 89 years old now. And that is, he really probably was not strong enough to make this trip. And I think this will probably be his last trip to go to India. And and he went this year because he wanted to go one more time and felt that he needed to do that. And, of course, the Indians love him very much and wanted him to come. But he has dedicated these last decades of his life to the work in India and has made dozens of trips over there. And so one of the joys that I've had in the trips that I've made is to be able to travel over there and spend time with Brother Harold and to talk with him and learn from him. And it was a very difficult trip for him to make this time. The travel there is hard, and the time change is completely reversed. And so It is, what, it's 10:47 in the morning here. So there it's about 9:30 at night. And so it's that switch is hard. And I will attest that the older you get, the harder it is. And it wears on you, just because once you get there, your time, you know, the middle of the day, you want to be asleep and your body wants to be asleep, but that's the time you've got to function. You've got, those are the opportunities that you have to speak and to teach. And so you have to fight through those things. And it can be a real challenge. Also, traveling with us was Brother Harold's daughter, Liz Roberts. She's there in the middle, you probably guessed. But she came in large part to kind of look after her parents, because Ed's wife, Mrs. Harold, Dee Dee Harold, came as well. And so Liz came in order to look after them, because they needed somebody to make sure everything was okay. Liz herself is a very skilled Bible teacher, and she taught multiple ladies' classes while she was there. So she took the opportunity to be there, and there she is with some of the Indian sisters. And after they had a ladies' class in one of the homes while we were there. So on this trip, we were somewhat limited in the cities we go to because of the small number of people we had. So there were four of us, including Brother Harold. Brother Harold just is not in strong enough physical condition to teach any sort of regular schedule. So all the teaching fell on the three of us, John, Lance, and me. And typically we would have twice as many as that. Typically we'd have more like six instead of three. And the reason for that is because last year, on the trip that I didn't go on, following that trip, there was there were some issues in southern India with some of the denominational Christians protesting. There were some issues with the government, and they were protesting that, and the government had kind of a crackdown. And in the government's eyes, there was no distinction on which Christians were which. They just wanted to check everybody out. So one of the Christian preachers who we work with, who had not been involved in any of the protests at all, was dragged in by the police and questioned about who his contacts were and so forth. And because of that situation, it was feared that several of the men who had traveled from the United States to India last year might have difficulty getting in the country, because the current government of India, the current president of India, and the leadership of India does not like outside missionaries. We are not supposed to go in there and do what we're doing. They don't like it. Now, the Christians in India do have freedom of religion, but they don't like outsiders coming in. They don't like outside money. They don't like outside missionaries. So we go in on tourist visas, and we try to keep a low profile. And so I talked earlier about speaking directly with Hindus and trying to convert Hindus. That's something that we don't do because it could undermine our very ability to go over there at all. And so we work with the Christians who are there teaching classes, and we trust in them to do the teaching to the Indian, to non-Christians in India. And so our goal is not to go out specifically and evangelize to Indians. It is to edify the brethren who are in India, because by the practical considerations that we have, we would not be able for long to go out and publicly teach in that way. We would risk being deported and not allowed back in the country. So we have to be very careful about that. And that's one of the reasons why I was asked to go this year, is because several of the men who had gone last year, who typically go, men I've traveled with over there in the past, it was feared that they might not be able to get in the country. So they asked me to go because I didn't go last year. But I also have experience in going, and I also have an active Indian visa, so I could get in easily. So we flew into New Delhi. That's where I landed from flying in from Paris, and then flew down to this country in the city of Hyderabad, and that's sort of our main base of operations. That's the city where Dr. Harrell was stationed during his academic appointment. And so Hyderabad is a very large city. It's about 7 million people. Probably most of you have never heard of it, but yet it's a city of 7 million people. And so when you get to Asia, there are these very large cities that most Westerners have never heard of. But it's roughly the same size as, say, Philadelphia. It's about that size. It's very big. And there are three congregations that we work with in the city of Hyderabad. There are other congregations outside of Hyderabad and around as well. We don't always travel to those. We try to focus our energy in the big cities, and those brethren come to us. And so the first Sunday I was there, arrived on Saturday night in Hyderabad, and so Sunday morning I went to the Balanagar congregation along with Brother Lance, and both of us spoke there at that congregation. So on weekends, all of us will usually split up and go to different congregations to speak. We try to spread ourselves around as much as we can on Sundays, and then we'll also hold gospel meeting times type services on Friday and Saturday nights of those weeks. And then during the week, we will hold classes where preachers and teachers from other areas will travel in, and we will have a number of them there. So this is one of the two congregations where we hold classes. In Hyderabad, we hold classes for preachers at two different congregations at the same time. So we'll split up, one or two go into one place, one or two go into the other place, and that's why it's difficult when we just have three of us to keep that schedule. And it was a little bit more challenging because normally we have more men to help with that. But this was that Sunday morning, that first Sunday morning, and I spoke there at Balanagar at Sunday morning services along with Brother Lance. There's Brother Lance speaking, and you can see here everyone sitting. You may notice that the women and men sit on opposite sides of the congregation. This was something that used to happen in the U.S. 100 years ago, but still happens at least in parts of India. Not everywhere in India. This is not a religious teaching per se, but this is simply a cultural tradition that they have, where the genders will separate like that. And then here I am with Brother Lance, as well as Brother Surrender, who's over here on the end. Brother Surrender has also traveled to the U.S. He actually has two daughters right now in the U.S. In Texas. And then the elders of the congregation here as well, Brother Johnson and Brother Chris Doss. And so they, that's the leadership of that congregation there at Balanagar. Balanagar is of the two primary congregations where we hold classes, it's the smaller of the two. We probably had 80 to 90 there on that Sunday morning. And they were down a little bit because it was a holiday weekend and people were traveling out of town just like we do on holiday weekends, people going home and so forth. But it is a well-established congregation there. And then this is the this is on the classes at the Mulali congregation. That is where Brother Benson, who is over here translating, you'll see him there, and Brother Harrell is speaking to them. Brother Harrell was really not teaching a class. He just came to speak to the brethren just for a few minutes to open things up. He just really didn't have the stamina to do much class teaching. He did do some preaching and some of the services, but that was very taxing on him. But he was able to come out and speak some. But the men that you see here in the crowd are preachers and teachers. They've traveled in for these classes. And so we hold these classes during the day. We'll do multiple sessions during the day and take turns speaking. And that first week, we were holding classes both at Mulali here and also at the Balanagar Church, where you saw me just a moment ago. Here I am teaching at the Balanagar classes. So this is not the Sunday worship service, but this is during the week where I'm teaching. And so the material that I taught in those classes was from a series that I have on the letters to the churches of Asia in Book of Revelation. And so I was able, obviously, because I was speaking to different audiences, I was able to present that material in multiple places. And our goal is, we very often focus on churches and church organization, how churches are supposed to be, because our goal is to edify these preachers and teachers to help them build better churches. That's our goal, to help teach them what the Bible has to say about what churches ought to be. And so I was focusing on Jesus's letters in the Book of Revelation to the churches of Asia, and talked about problems that those churches had, and ways that Jesus addressed those issues, and then applied that to our own churches, how we can look at our churches that we are at, whether it's at Fayette or one of these churches in India, and we can assess what are the issues at this congregation, what kind of preaching do I need to be doing, what problems do I need to focus on to help this congregation be what it needs to be. And to let them know, each congregation is going to be different. Just as the churches of Asia that Jesus was writing to there, all of those situations were different. So that was the material I was speaking on. You can see here that Brother Surrender is standing beside me, and he's translating for me. So in all of these situations where we are teaching classes and preaching, we have to have a translator. Because while some of the Indians will speak English to some degree, some simply don't. They don't speak English. And so when you're speaking, you get sort of in a rhythm. You have to say enough that they can make sense of what you're saying, but you can't say too much that it makes it difficult for the translator to translate. So you're saying something and you're stopping and you're waiting for him to speak, and then you're saying something else. So it breaks it up, and it takes some getting used to speak that way. You don't just have a train of thought. You've got to remember where you were. And you also have to word it in such a way that a non-native English speaker can translate it. So you have to word things in a way that's accessible to them. So sometimes you'll say something, you'll put something in a certain way, or you'll unthinkingly use an idiomatic expression, and they'll just kind of look at you like, I don't know what to do with that. And so you've got to think, okay, how can I reword that he can understand and still get my point across? And so as time goes on, you get better at doing that, but it invariably happens that you'll say something and they'll just, you know, they're not getting it. So here I am speaking at the Balanagar classes, and this is a group shot that we took at the Balanagar classes. We probably had, I would say, 50 to 60 at those classes during the time, and at the Mulali classes we probably had more like 75 or 80. And those are going on simultaneously. So during that first week, you know, we're speaking probably to 125, 130 men gathered together, and that's really having a big impact, because all of those people are from various congregations, and so they're going to go back to these different congregations and take those lessons that we were able to bring and hopefully help the churches where they are. And so that's a lot of the what we're doing, and it's done a lot of good work. This is Brother John. You see Brother Harold there in the background. They are also interviewing the preachers. So a lot of these preachers receive support from American congregations. And one of the things that we do, and we weren't able to do as much of this time because the person who's doing interviews obviously isn't teaching, and we had to have people available to teach as well. So we weren't able to do as many interviews as we have in the past because we were short on numbers. But we're able to sit down and talk with them and then write reports back to the churches in America who are supporting them, send a photo, let them know what's going on, and to give some contact. So a lot of times when churches in the U.S. support evangelists in foreign countries, they really don't know what's going on there. And maybe not get many reports back because a lot of times there's a real language issue. And so this is a way that we can help bridge that gap and help give American churches confidence in the men that they're supporting and get back if there are any issues. Sometimes there's issues with support checks reaching them or something like that, and we can help resolve those situations. You'll see a lot of interesting things in Hyderabad. Again, sometimes you run into camels, and again, this was sort of a camel trip. I ran into camels two different times. That's not usual. But this was, again, outside my hotel. We came outside the hotel, and there were these guys who were just kind of riding camels by. These were not soldiers or anything. They were just seemed to be out with sort of like you would go horse riding in the U.S. They were kind of camel riding. I see camels more often than I see horses. I don't know if you can make this out, but this is an electric pole on a street in Hyderabad. Those are electrical wires, so I don't know if those would pass a U.S. inspection or not, but it seems to work. And then you'll also just regularly, and this is the same group of people from my car window, two different photos, just so you could get an idea of transportation. They're all riding a motorcycle. So this is a family riding a motorcycle, and there are five of them on this motorcycle. I think this is the father, and he's driving the motorcycle, and this is a daughter who is riding in front of him. And then you see back here, I think is the wife. Obviously, it's a Muslim family, and they've got two children here. And a lot of times you'll see women also riding motorcycles. The man will be driving, the woman will be riding the motorcycle, and she'll be riding it side saddle. So she'll be sitting on it with her legs off to one side, and they'll just be zipping through traffic. And that's not unusual. We saw one family ride by on a motorcycle, and the boy was sitting between his mother and father, and he was asleep. So just... just like you would take a car, your kids on a car ride, and they might fall asleep in the back. Well, he was in the middle of a motorcycle, and he had fallen asleep. He was just out. And so I hope they had hold of him. But that's very common in India. The motorcycles are cheap. They're able to weave through traffic, and they can get a lot of people on it. This is when we went to Brother Benson's house. Brother Benson was very kind to invite us over. He and his wife Matilda there on the far right. They had us to their home, and we're always very appreciative when he's able to do that, and they cook for us. There's Brother Harold and his wife Dee Dee that night that they had us over, and there's food that she had cooked there in her home. I happen to like Indian food, so it works out well, but the Indians can also make food that's hotter than I want to try. But this was all very, very palatable for us. She eases down the heat when she knows that we're coming over, so we're able to eat it. But it was very good. This is me speaking at Mulali on a Saturday night. So I told you that we do sort of gospel meeting type services on the weekend. So during the week we do our classes, then on the weekend we'll do gospel meeting type services, and then on Sunday we'll split up and go to different congregations. So we may be at three or four different congregations, all of us, on a Sunday morning. And this was on a Saturday night. There's Brother Raj Kumar, who's translating for me. And during the lessons that I spoke on the seven churches of Asia during the classes that I taught. The lessons that I brought, I spoke from the Sermon on the Mount, and had lessons that I spoke on the Sermon on the Mount for those. Then that Sunday morning, this is the second Sunday morning, I spoke at a smaller church in Hyderabad that's called Raju Colony. And a colony is sort of used in a similar way that we would use the term subdivision, I guess. But Raju Colony is just a neighborhood that's called that. And this is a very much of a neighborhood church. And this is a relatively new church building that they had. I'd spoken, the last time I spoke at Raju Colony a few years ago, they were still meeting in a home. And so I spoke there to them in a home. Now they have a church building. It's fairly small. It's probably about the size of the pews right here in the middle of our auditorium. I mean, the whole building is that size. That's about how big it is. And you can see here, a little bit crooked there, but Brother Stanley is translating for me. You can see it's not a very big building, but it's a really nice building for them. They have a presence there in the neighborhood, and they in fact said that since they had had the building, that they'd had a lot more visitors, a lot more people come. One of the issues that they have in India is that a lot of times when they meet in homes, they may have people who won't come into their home because the home is viewed as being owned by somebody who is lower caste. And if it's a lower caste home, then people, especially those who are not Christians, they won't come into the home. And to us, that's crazy to us, but they're very much the caste system is perpetuating. If you have a public structure like this, then there are no issues with that. And so anybody would feel welcome to come into a church building. And so in India, church buildings have a particular importance beyond just a convenient place to meet. It also opens up the ability for people to come in. We might think, well, they shouldn't be like that, and that may be true, but culturally that's the way Indian society works. And until they become Christians and have an understanding of equality before God, caste system is real. And you just because you don't like it, or we may not think that that's the way to operate, nonetheless, it's been around for a few thousand years, and you're going to have to deal with it. And this culturally is important for them. Here is a group photo there at Raju Colony. I am there in the middle. You may be able to pick me out of the crowd. That was the Sunday morning, the second Sunday morning that I was there. And again, I spoke on from the Sermon on the Mount. One of the interesting things that you see in India are these auto rickshaws, sometimes referred to as tuk-tuks in other places. Indians, I've never heard Indians call them that. They always should call them auto rickshaws. They're little three-wheeled taxis, essentially, and that have sort of like a little Briggs & Stratton type engine. I mean, they're not, and they are absolutely not clean friendly. These are not green friendly outfits at all. But you can find these everywhere. I think half of all vehicles and half of all people in India drive these auto rickshaws, because everywhere you go, there's tons of them. And you can hop in them and ride them for not a lot of money. We typically don't hop in them because we're not sure exactly where we're going to end up at if we do. But Indians use them because they don't always speak the language, and so you're not necessarily able to convey to them where you're going. So we try to be a little bit picky about the transportation we use so we can actually show up where we're going. The second week of classes, we spoke at Mulali, but we were speaking to Tamil brethren. So the first week was to native people around Hyderabad who speak Telugu, the language called Telugu. This class were aimed at people who speak Tamil, and they came from the state of Tamil Nadu. And typically, we have been traveling down to Tamil Nadu, and this is Brother Thomas translating for me. Brother Thomas is a very sweet man and always has a smile on his face. But they traveled up, so we're here in Hyderabad where the arrow is pointing. They're from down in this region. We typically travel down to that region and do classes for them where they're at. But that is where they had the Christian protests last year, and it was decided that it might be best for us not to go there this time, just because we didn't want to draw undue attention to ourselves. So for this year, we invited the brethren to come up to Hyderabad, and we held classes there and spoke to them there. There you see everyone sitting there during a class, and here's a group shot of everyone. So these preachers had traveled in from Tamil Nadu, and so we had shorter classes there because they were away from home, further away from home, so we did two and a half days of classes for them so they could travel back. And we had, again, probably 60 or 70 of those brethren who had traveled up. So we had to use different translators, obviously, because it's a different language. And that's why Brother Thomas was translating for me there. And so then, midweek or the second week, we traveled back to New Delhi. I'll make a quick mention here. Over here's Mumbai. Brother John traveled to Mumbai for the weekend when I was speaking at Raju Colony. He went to Mumbai to speak to a congregation there. So I did not travel to Mumbai this trip, but Brother John did go over there and visit the church there. So Delhi is the largest city in India, and it's one of the largest cities in the world, with an estimated population of almost 19 million people. That's a lot of people. And it is a very, very big city. Traffic is awful, and the air pollution there is horrible. It's the worst I've ever seen anywhere. I mean, the sky is just gray with pollution all the time. It's one of the worst polluted cities in the world. And with 19 million people, I don't know how they're going to fix it. So it affects your ability to talk. When I was there, I was noticing I was having throat issues just teaching classes because you're just constantly breathing that stuff in, and it's really hard on you. That's where I happened to see the camels that I showed you earlier. But we did classes there for not people from Delhi, which is what you would expect. Well, out of 19 million people, surely you can find somebody there to do classes to. In fact, we did classes for a group of Christians from this area over here in the northeast. You'll notice here is Bangladesh. Over here is Myanmar, Burma. China's up here. So this is way over in the northeast. And I've been to that area about 10 years ago. I traveled up there three times, three different years to that area. And it's really hard to get to. It's in the foothills of the Himalayas. So you land, and then you're driving up into the mountains, sort of this kind of corkscrew type drive. It takes you several hours to get up there, and you think you're going to fall off the mountain at any point and plunge to your death. It's sort of like out of a Indiana Jones movie or something. But Shillong here is where we had traveled to, and also Imphal. Well, Brother Tong, who here is translating for me. And by the way, Delhi this time of year is actually fairly chilly. It's cooler. So you can see I have on a jacket. All of them will have on sweaters. I also, the second day, I think that day I just had on a shirt with a jacket. The next day I had on a shirt, jacket, and sweater as well because it was chilly. They did not really have heat in that room that we were in. It's a really nice facility. Brother Tong was our initial contact from there. He's from the Northeast, but he lives in Delhi now. And he works with a congregation of Christians who live in Delhi, obviously, but are all from the Northeast. So they're people who have traveled there for work or to get an education, and they're living there, but they're all speakers there from the Northeast. Here I am with Brother Tong and Brother Benson, and here I am with Brother Lankoshin, who is a preacher who's been working in the Northeast. He still lives in the Northeast. And he had come in. That's he and his wife there to take this picture. And this is a group shot. So most of these men you see in this photo are from the Northeast. And it's really hard for them to get there. It's not easy for them to travel in. One man told me that he had traveled by train for a day and a half just to get to the airport in the Northeast to fly to Delhi. So that's hard to get. That's hard to do. I mean, those train rides, we're not talking first class train rides here. This is not easy travel for them. And we even had some men who'd come over from Myanmar or Burma who had crossed into India and travel. I don't know if they were there legally or not. I don't know if you can legally do that, but that's kind of a porous border, and they had come to our classes, and we were really happy to have them. So this was, I taught these classes and then flew out. Brother John and Brother Lance stayed through the weekend and also taught on that Sunday. They preached on that Sunday. I was traveling back because I needed to get back. And of course, at that point, I was looking for the way out, which is at the Delhi airport. If you want to know where the exit is, that's it. But we had a very good trip. I, of course, was doing those those same lessons that I had done in other places from the seven churches at Asia and to these brethren. And they are able then to take those lessons back to the Northeast, to these different churches. And so it's really astonishing the kind of impact that we're able to have and that you're able to have with your support of this trip over so many different congregations. I mean, dozens and dozens of congregations throughout India have been impacted by that because we're able to speak to those different preachers and teachers. They're able to spread out and go back to those congregations and bring lessons and gain from the insights that they gain from our classes and be built up. And this has been an ongoing work, as I said, for a quarter century now. And the initial goal that Brother Harold had was not simply just to go to villages and evangelize and hope to baptize some people, but you go back the next year and they're just gone. But rather to focus on building long-term churches that would be there, that could grow, and over time they would grow from that church at Mulali. Started off as about five families on a rooftop. Now they have 200 people and a church building and host these classes. And so that's the kind of growth that we've seen and the doors of opportunity that have opened. When I first started going 15 years ago, there weren't any classes to Tamil brethren. That entire area opened up to us through contacts that we were able to make. When I first started going, we had no contacts in the Northeast. But we've been able to make those contacts, and that work has really taken off. And so just in that span of time that I've been going, those entire areas of India have opened up tremendously. And from literally having no contacts there to having well over 100 brethren that we were able to teach. And those themselves are teachers and preachers who are going back. So I want to thank the congregation here for your support. I want to thank you for your patience and listening to me bring this report. If anybody has any questions, I'm glad to talk to you afterwards. Of course, the great thing about the gospel of Jesus Christ is that it is the same for you here, us here in Lexington, Kentucky, as it is for people in Delhi or Hyderabad or Shillong, India, anywhere. Anywhere around the world, it's the same gospel message. We have translators, but the message is the same, and that's an extraordinary thing. And we're thankful for the opportunity to be able to serve God, regardless of who we are or where we're from. If there's anyone here this morning who's not a Christian, who wants to take advantage of the opportunity that you have to serve God, you can confess the name of Jesus Christ, you can turn away from the things of this world, and you can be baptized, having your sins washed away. That's the exact same message that we bring in India. That's the same message that we have here at the Fayette congregation, because that's the message that we find in Scripture. If anyone needs to become a Christian, if there's anyone here who perhaps has strayed away and needs to make things right, come forward as we stand and sing.